following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 8th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Another gorgeous day in the Auburn Opelika area and tons to get to on the show this afternoon. More football news, more football reactions from around college football. Everybody's favorite. I know we're going to have maybe 2 hours of this conversation. Hockey's back today? No? All right. Hey, I know nobody else is excited. I am, though. Opening night in the NHL. No, we won't talk about it today. But just know that I'm excited, whether you are or not. Baseball playoffs happening right now. College football news where apparently Disney is trying to just recreate college football. There's a huge story going on about that as well. So lots of that coming up in hour number two, but it is a Tuesday afternoon and we got a full house here in the studio alongside me, Christian Griffin, voice of the Lee Scott Warriors with me. Hello, sir. Good to see you in the studio. Sorry about Friday night, my man.
What happened Friday?
Auburn beat Central.
There we go. Yeah. I don't know why you're apologizing for great news like that.
Man. Yeah, that was good news. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a first for sure. That was a professional version of Lee Scott Auburn University football right there. Mm. That's kind of been the way that Auburn fans have watched Auburn football this year. That was how Friday went at Judd Scott Field, but you get to wipe your slate clean. You get to go again this Friday night. And as you mentioned, there wasn't a hand clap for hockey. I hand clapped for the MLB postseason. I got a plenty of rants to go with.
Oh, boy.
Just with these first couple days and the way that MLB is going in the direction of everything right now. I know there's a lot of Auburn football talk as well with Thorne and Freeze not being on the same page on a 4th-and-1 that now there's a big controversy about what the right call was and what did or didn't happen. I'm sure we'll dive into that here a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We'll get to a lot of that coming up in hour number two. But as we have done for a long time on Tuesdays in hour number one, we're joined by Lindsey Crosby, Baseball Power Hour. Unfortunately, it's minus the Atlanta Braves, who decided to turn their act around, get it together, make it to the postseason, and then shatter the hearts of everybody in the Atlanta metro area. Lindsey, good to see you, my man.
It is good to be seen. It's good to be here. It is frustrating the Braves are done, but at the same time, like we talked about last week, they weren't even supposed to be there, man. Like, they really weren't, and we got to see them in the postseason. That was great. We then got to hear from Alex Anthopoulos on Friday about his outlook on the season and the offseason. And then just for fun, Friday afternoon, we got to hear from Butch Thompson about Auburn baseball's
boom
fall slate coming up and what they're looking at. So it's been, while the 24 season didn't go the way you wanted, all eyes are now on 25 while MLB finishes out their postseason.
Well, we're talking all things baseball here in hour number one. So if you want to talk baseball, comments, questions, whatever the case may be, Major League Baseball, College Baseball, Minor League Baseball, Lindsey, I'll throw that one to you, my friend. Mm-hmm. Anything that's on your mind here in hour number one in terms of baseball, we want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. We'll talk Braves postseason, not actual playoff, but season ending outlook. Is that the best way to say that? I don't know. We'll talk about the Braves, though, now that they're no longer playing baseball this season. We'll also talk some Auburn baseball, Major League Baseball playoffs, all that good stuff. And so let's start with the Braves. I think that's a great place to start for a team. You said it. We've said it multiple times. They were not supposed to be in the playoffs. They had no business being there. They did what they had to do, came down to the final game of the final day, and they were able to squeak in. Just an underwhelming performance, though, in their series with San Diego, who has proven early in this postseason that they're a really good baseball team. But just an underwhelming performance, I feel like, Lindsay, for what the Braves did in their short playoff run.
Yeah, the Braves had starting pitching struggles in that two-game series. Chris Sale did not make the postseason roster, so they threw prospect A.J. Smith-Shawver in Game 1. They threw Max Fried in Game 2. Those two guys combined for 8 earned runs on 12 hits and 3 1/3 innings. I'm not a mathematician, but that's not good.
Yeesh.
On your ERA. But outside of that, you saw the Braves bullpen. I think only one other reliever allowed a run in these two games. So you saw even the back end of the bullpen, just everybody being burned, right? You burned all your high leverage arms on Sunday in that Monday doubleheader. You saw Atlanta still be able to get decent performances from the pen. And Alex Anthopoulos talked about that to us on Friday when he met with the media. And he said that it honestly was just like we didn't clinch soon enough. Like that's, we had to go down to the wire to game 162 to get in. And because of that, they had gone through, they either injury or recent usage had taken out all of their starting options. They had to go with A.J. Smith-Shawver in game 1. And that's not why they lost. They lost because the offense didn't do squat in the series. But it didn't help that they were stuck with going with, I would argue, option 8 this year over all the rest of their guys simply because of injury and of having used guys recently. And he put it all back to, we got to clinch earlier. Like, we have to, we can't leave this up to needing help from other teams and the final day of the season.
And so with that, the Braves get eliminated by San Diego 2-0. Second game was better. I mean, it was a better performance. It was closer anyway.
Two home runs, two Braves home runs in that game. Michael Harris and Jorge Soler. That was nice.
Yeah, it was. It was nice and just wasn't enough. And, man, I can't stress enough Chris Sale not being there for that series and the fact that turns out the Braves knew he wasn't going to be in that series, and it was announced late with what it ended up being, back spasms, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah, he was scratched on Monday with the back spasms, and then he wasn't on the NLD the wild card roster. The worst thing was, like, so we're talking to Alex Anthopoulos via Zoom on Friday morning. It's about 11 a.m. Atlanta time, 10 a.m. here. His office overlooks the ballpark. He sits out. It looks like it's out in right field, overlooking the ballpark. Chris Sale is on the field throwing. He threw a bullpen on Friday.
You could see it?
You could see a figure. You couldn't see well enough who it was, but he told us that Sale's out there throwing right now, and he would have been on the NLDS roster had they advanced, and he probably would have started a game. Maybe not game 1, but he would have started the game had they advanced, and that's the frustrating part is you did all of this work to keep your starting rotation healthy. Freed goes on the IL once. Lopez goes on the IL twice. Morton doesn't. Schoenblock doesn't. Sale doesn't. And then the moment when the injury hits for Chris Sale is at the very end of the season when you arguably need him the most and you're not able to use him.
Kind of just represents the Braves season as a whole. Where
it's very fitting, yeah.
A fitting beginning where what? The Braves played like 7 innings with the team that they ran out onto the opening field roster mm-hmm. with, or something along
the
those lines.
The opening day lineup got a grand total of 7 innings together.
That's such a wild stat.
All season, not just like the first game, all season.
Is there a close second, or do we have a number for the team with the second fewest innings played with their full lineup? I mean, I'm sure at that point it's games, not innings.
It's right. And even then, I don't necessarily, it's really easy for like one injured guy to just ruin that for the whole year. But, like, Atlanta, like, that's the first team, my friends over at OptiStats, that's the first time any team has made the postseason with 3 of their opening day starters missing 25 or more games. Jeez. And that undersells the whole thing. Like, missing the last 25 games. But that undersells the whole thing because they had a ton of guys miss time. And it's just, it's wild.
When I look at the wild card series, you kind of go back and look at them, only one of them got to a game 3. Three of them were 2-0 sweeps. Yeah. The Tigers took down the Astros, which we all love to see. Yep. The Royals took down the Orioles, which I love to see. The Mets took down the Brewers. Nobody likes to see that. That was the one that went 2-1, though. That was the only series that went three games, and the Braves got swept.
Yeah, and this was something unlike often a lot of the road teams won. You know, Kansas City was a road team. Detroit was a road team. Obviously, Atlanta wasn't, but New York was a road team. Three of the four road teams won in that series. And we don't typically see a lot. Like, it's usually not three of the four
just swept. I mean, they just
be sweeps.
Yeah.
But it feels like the team that wins game one almost always turns around and wins the series. And
yeah, the numbers on that are insane.
Right now, in the divisional round, all four games, or all four series, are 1-1. It's the first time in history you've had all four of them 1-1 on the same day.
Really?
Yes. Like, you've had them where they've been 1-1 before, but not at the same time because of the schedules and things. This is the first time you've had a day where right now all of these have become shorter series now. Because it's now, like, every single one of them is 1-1 on the exact same day. You'll get two NL games. I'm sorry, I think it's two NL games,
mm-hmm.
and then you get a whole slate tomorrow of four games, and it's just, this is wild. Like, how often does this happen? This is the postseason of parity and chaos.
In terms of talking Braves, right, and what the end of year outlook is, right. Got a question in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067, talks about your work in covering the Marlins, Lindsay, says Skip Shoemaker left as their manager. Mm-hmm. Question is there any thought that he'll take over for Brian Snitker as the Braves manager in 2025?
So Snitker has already said that he's coming back. So has the rest of the coaching staff. And AA said this on Friday, unless one of these guys chooses to retire, they are all being tendered contracts for next year. I'm honestly amazed that Skip didn't have a longer look in Cincinnati. I thought he was going to be a Cincinnati Red. I thought he was going to manage the Reds.
Instead, they went with Francona.
They went with Terry Francona. They didn't even interview Schumacher, which is surprising. I'm a big fan of Skip Schumacher. I think he's a good manager. That alluded to, I covered him for a while this year when it was, you know, writing for SI on their Marlins site. I think he's a good manager. He's probably the most in-demand manager this year or this offseason. But I'm at this point, Brian Snitker's been around long enough with Atlanta and has done a good enough job. Obviously, won a World Series. He's going to have the job as long as he wants it. Now, that being said, I would expect him to retire probably after this upcoming season. He is older. His contract does have a natural stopping point after next year. He is 68 years old. He'll turn, you know, it's like the timing works out nice. He'll turn 69 this year. He can get one additional year. And then the contract has an option that he can choose to decline and retire after next season, right before his 70th birthday.
Do you believe that's going to happen?
You don't see a lot of managers in their 70s.
There's been a few, though.
There's been a few. Ron Washington is up there.
That man will coach till he falls over.
It feels like if next season is not what Snitker called the hardest season of his career, just because of all these injuries, if next year is a more normal season for Atlanta, you may see him right off in the sunset.
Does it depend on, and I'm going to let Christian talk, I know he's got something to say, does it depend on if they make the postseason?
I feel like if things go bad enough next year where they don't make the postseason, we're assuming it's a year like this year with injuries and things like that.
Sure.
He probably wants to come back for one last chance to try to fix it. If it's just the team collapses, poor performances, poor pitching, all of that, then I could see they decide mutually to just go do something else.
Hmm.
But I just don't see that happening with this Braves team, because even this year with all the injuries, they still found a way to make the postseason.
We'll wait till after the break, because it's something that is going to take more than just a minute or two.
We can do that. All right. Well, we'll keep talking about the Braves then, and how they were eliminated. Offseason was the word that I was looking for, not their postseason outlook. Their offseason outlook.
What a recap.
Yeah, or just anything like that. I mean, those two words escaped my brain as soon as the microphones came on. But, you know, professional, I think, or whatever. 334-321-1390. Give us a call or shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. Back after this here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Christian Griffin in the studio with us as well. And Lindsey Crosby for our Baseball Power Hour joining us here on the show today as well. Plug it all, my man. Tell people where they can find you, what you got going on in terms of baseball coverage, because there is always something to talk about around Major League Baseball.
There is, and there's a lot of places where I'm doing that. There's two different shows you can watch. First Pitch is a daily MLB recap show. We talk about everything that happened in baseball yesterday, whether it's games, whether it's Manny Machado throwing a ball at the Dodgers dugout, things like that. There's also Braves Today, which is Atlanta Braves specific. Same thing, Monday through Friday, comes out every single day. We are breaking down big stories to know. We did a whole show today on Max Fried. Yes, the case for, case against, possible contracts. Yes, and then there's also the writing that goes along with that, bravestoday.com. We dropped two pieces over the weekend that were really good. One was a piece on Max Fried. The other one was a look at the biggest areas of improvement Atlanta has to do over the offseason for this roster.
Bingo. Well, there you go. Go check all that out. Lindsey Crosby doing fantastic work on all of his different platforms. Christian, you had something Atlanta Braves that you needed to dive into, but 2 minutes wasn't long enough. So be my guest, my friend. Go ahead.
You know, I wanted to ask you, Lindsey, did Anthopoulos, did he talk anything about the Chipper Jones talk and how did you see that like 2.5 minute video where Chipper Jones, for those who haven't seen it, basically talked about how this season and working with the Braves has been really, really frustrating. And I think it kind of reflects the entire world of baseball right now, to where you are more than ever in the home run, walk, strikeout era. That is what you look at, and that is what Chipper said the Braves have prioritized more than anything. They want to hit the long ball, which every team does, but last season you kind of got a glimpse of what they were hoping to do. Obviously, it was astronomical compared to everything else. This season, you kind of hit reality with everything, but he talked about how getting base hits, getting guys on base, slugging percentage, things like those are so overlooked in today's world of baseball, and you saw it yesterday. With so many things, and I guess I'm going to go ahead and get into my rant a little bit here. But with Cleveland and Detroit and Skrubel, the Cy Young winner in the American League, if you are the home team, if you are the Cleveland Indians, and you have Skrubel on the ropes, first and second, nobody out, in a 0-0 game where you feel like one run could be enough to win the game, you had three times where that was the case. Two double plays, back-to-back strikeouts, and a pop-up to end the innings. What's up with baseball? Bunt somebody over, hit a hard ground ball to second base, take the lead. But for some reason, that world of baseball has come and gone.
Yeah, and Chipper's son kind of clarified on social media after that that he was referring to baseball in general being frustrating, more so than Braves players specifically. But yeah, that's the game has evolved a bit. And modern teams have crunched the numbers, and they have decided it is more reliable to try to get one big hit than to string together three or four or five small ones with how good modern pitching is. And I was, while you were asking, I was pulling up the transcript from the press conference. Alex was asked, the gist of the question, I believe this came from David O'Brien of The Athletic, said, you have said, Snitta said, this team is built to slug. You guys have done that at a really high level. This year, not so much. So you just look at it as one of those years. What went wrong to make that happen? And Alex talked about, last year was a historic generational offense. And for those of you who don't quite remember, Atlanta tied the modern baseball record for home runs in the season, 307 homers. They had a team slugging percentage of 501, the highest in history. And this year, obviously, they fell back from that. And Alex, in essence, said things didn't quite work right on offense because, one, he didn't do a good enough job of building depth, which is always the answer he's going to give. but also a lot of the injuries impacted the way these guys played. And I think two things can be true at once. You did have a ridiculous number of injuries, right? You lost the reigning MVP, this dynamic game-changing player. You lost Austin Riley for the last month and a half, 2 months. You lost Michael Harris for multiple months. He is coming off of 2 years of batting 300. You lost Ozzie Albies, things like that. But at the same time, the team did slump. The team did struggle early in the year. I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, but was talking to some folks around baseball that know more than me on a lot of these things.
That doesn't happen often.
It shocks me, too, whenever it happens. and he was talking about the league's adjustment to Atlanta. What they did last year is they were, in essence, sitting off speed. They were sitting on sliders. They were sitting on breaking pitches, things like that. They were really good against sliders last year. And it would be easy for them to spot a fastball up versus a breaking ball down. Because ideally, you're throwing your forcing fastballs up in the zone. You're throwing your sliders down.
Sure.
And so the way that teams approach them this year is, one, they started throwing, instead of just four-seamers, they started throwing more sinkers as well and cutters. That's just a trend in baseball in general, throwing multiple fastballs. But also, Atlanta went from like 27th to 7th in low fastballs faced this year. And so what that does, the visual cue the Braves hitters were using, as theorized by this person who's much smarter than me at this, is the second or the moment you can see the vertical separation between the two pitches, you know this is going to be a fastball up, this is going to be a breaking ball down.
Right.
Throwing the low fastballs delays that realization just long enough where, unlike in previous years, now you can't fire in time to at least foul that fastball off. So it was a lot of teams adjusted how they faced Atlanta. Atlanta also struggled. You saw some of these guys adjust back. Matt Olson had a nuclear last third of the season. I mean, he almost hit his usual milestones of, 100 RBI and stuff at the very end of the year. Like, he went nuclear there. But not everybody adjusted, combined with all the injuries. You have things like Orlando Arcia batting fifth, which is not a recipe for anybody to be successful. So he did touch on it. He really minimized that it was more so the injuries than the approach. But also, he's right. Like, teams have concluded it is more reliable to try to get one home run than to get four or five consecutive base hits, as frustrating as that is for classic baseball fans to understand.
How much of an impact, I guess these two things kind of work hand in hand, where you're talking about slump and injuries, with somebody like Ronald Acuna on first base, who is one of the top stolen base threats in the game. You bat Ozzie Albies, or you even had Matt Olson or Austin Riley, whoever you're arguably your best fastball hitter at 2 and 3, because you're going to see more fastballs with the threat of Ronald trying to steal second base off of those sliders. How much of an impact does somebody like Ronald Acuna affect Matt Olson to where, again, you might only see one fastball per at-bat?
I think there's not a coincidence that Matt Olson's best year of his entire career is the year that Ronald Acuna Jr. won the MVP.
Okay.
Because Ronald was getting on in front of him. And that's something teams legitimately had to worry about until this year. And even when Ronald started slow this year and then he got hurt, he never really had a chance to make that adjustment. But that definitely does change things. This team is not very fast. This team does not steal a lot. They don't. Their skill at base running might be like they know when to try to get the extra base and they don't, but they're not very good at stolen bases in general. And the replacements that they brought in midseason were worse than the guys that they replaced, right? Like, you're not going to improve on a Ozzie Albies in June. You're just not going to find somebody better than him in June. And so I think it's kind of, I think that they go hand in hand. Having the injuries meant that each guy, you were better able to focus on just that guy and not the game scenario happening, because that does impact, pitchers throw more fastballs with a runner on first base.
I hadn't thought about it that way.
If a guy steals, you're even more likely to throw more fastballs with a guy on first base. Like, that's just kind of the way the game naturally works.
I'm not surprised that there's a lot of math that was involved in that. I just, to play devil's advocate quickly, what it sounds like to me is a guy like Chip or old school baseball, like, oh, new generation, new kids. But I get where he's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, it would be frustrating because he's seen it work. But at the same time, it's a different game than it used to be. It's like,
yeah,
it's like when your grandparents don't understand why you don't just go buy a house. Like, just stop reading, just go buy a house. It's like, well, it doesn't work that way now.
Hear that,
it
Grandma?
Yeah. Hope you're listening out there. Yeah. Well, no, I think that's a fascinating conversation and one that I think will be ongoing for quite some time. And depending on how the game changes, even in the next handful of years, as we've seen it through these last handful of years. A lot more baseball talk to get to as we're 30 minutes into hour number one. We'll dive a little bit deeper into the postseason, plus more Auburn baseball updates as fall ball starts. All of that coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Packed house here this afternoon. Lindsey Crosby in the studio with us talking our baseball power hour. And is there anything else, Lindsey, before we look at overall postseason as of right now? I guess for Christian, too. I know you had a lot you wanted to get into. Is there anything else, I guess, for Braves fans in this and the off-season outlook, the off-season news, what we can expect, what fans are expecting, all of that. I mean, kind of to put a bow on that for now in terms of off-season stuff for the Braves.
Yeah, the biggest takeaway for me from Anthopoulos' press conference on Friday is that they expect payroll to go up. He said payroll's gone up almost every year since they've been here. From a cash perspective, Atlanta had a top five payroll this year. Like, Atlanta is spending money, and they expect it to go up. And he said even the years where we've had a payroll number, implying that there was a limit, he said in season when I've gone and asked for money, it's always been there. So this organization is spending money. It's not where Liberty Media used to be tight-fisted. They are spending money. They have been in the tax for two straight years. We'll probably be in the tax next year, and they are still looking to add. I just don't think it'll be the type of money to get a Willy Adames, to get a Corbin Burns, you know, those top of the a Juan Soto, those top of the market guys. But they are still looking to add, and they are looking to spend more money this year than they did last year.
And we know that, that Anthopoulos is about as generic of an answer as anybody in the entire league on.
And he will tell you that.
Yes, but I mean, he works behind the scenes really well. If you were Anthopoulos, and although you wouldn't, I guess you're not Anthopoulos because I'm asking you to actually tell me something, but if there was a name or two, whether a guy on the mound or a position player that you would love to get or you would love to see the Braves get, who would that be?
I think you could see Atlanta. I think about trades for the most part because that's like, because you don't know in free agency how much a guy's going to cost, right? But a trade, you have a better idea. I can see the Braves making some sort of deal with the Cubs. I can see them getting a guy like a Nico Horner to play shortstop instead of second base.
Okay.
Because the Cubs have a lot of extra infield prospects like a Matt Shaw, like a James Triantos that they want to get up. So I can see Atlanta doing something like that to get a guy like that. And as far as what it would take, I mean, pitching prospect, Braves love trading those away. You know, does catcher Drake Baldwin get moved? I don't know. They're worried about not having enough depth, but at the same time, this team does not like using young catchers. So I'm looking for some sort of deal this offseason, with a Chicago team. I think it's going to be the Cubs, but maybe they make a deal with the White Sox to go get a starter. You'd think Garrett Crochet would be the target there. I don't know if they'll outbid everybody else, but I could see them making a deal with one of those teams. They have a good relationship with the White Sox and Chris Getz, so you never know.
Tell me why the Atlanta Braves will find a way to bring Shohei Ohtani to Atlanta.
because only $2 million.
Because the Dodgers will play a series in Atlanta next year.
There we go.
Wow. So I mean, that's a good answer. Speaking of Shohei,
yeah,
played his first couple postseason games, and
I think he did okay.
I was going to ask.
He hit a homer. He hit a homer.
Yeah, he did. A pretty big one. he is unbelievable to watch. And it's so exciting that he's finally getting to be a part of the postseason because he started in the with the Angels, who don't make the postseason all that often. So, yeah, as we flip over to what's happening in the postseason, the wild card wrapped up. The Mets beat the Brewers. The Padres beat the Braves. The Royals beat the Orioles. And the Tigers beat the Astros. And as we said earlier in the division series, all four of them going into today are tied at one apiece. You have Mets Phillies tonight or this afternoon, and then you have Padres and Dodgers tonight. Tomorrow, all four teams play, or all four games, correct? Right? Yeah. Tigers, Guardians on the other side, and Royals, Yankees after the Royals get one back last night. I mean, these have all been really good series so far.
It's been fantastic. And I there's a couple big picture themes that you've seen. I think the first one is home runs have been important. The loss.
Yeah, you hear that, Christian? Not singles, homers.
You know, the home runs have been important.
Two-run home runs are better than solo home runs.
Emmanuel
Clase. There's a guy on first base.
He's not wrong.
Solo home runs better than a single.
Yeah. Emmanuel Clase, the all-world closer for the Guardians, gave up 5 earned runs all season, gives up 3 runs in the ninth yesterday. 3-run homers, the big hit, but obviously he does give up 4 straight hits, 2 singles, the 3-run homer, and another single, and gets pulled. Again, 5 runs all year, gave up 3 yesterday. We saw in the wild card round, Josh Hader had a collapse. We saw Edwin Diaz have a collapse against the Phillies on Sunday. It has been a rough time to be an elite closer, and I think part of the reason for that is teams are asking these guys to do things they've never, or they don't do that often. Clase had come into a game before the ninth inning, like, once all year, and it was in August. He comes in this time, it's, you know, it's not a clean inning, and he's asked to come out and do it, sit down, and come back out for the ninth. And at a certain point, you're asking guys to do things they're not familiar with, and you see these closers, these elite closers, faltering late in the postseason. It's wild to me. But it's also just one of those things. It's why what Detroit's doing is so amazing, because every single reliever in that bullpen for Detroit has pitched in high leverage. They don't all have saves, but they've all pitched in high leverage. So you can ask anybody to come in any scenario, and they have some experience doing that. And that's not something that Emmanuel Clase is familiar with, coming in the eighth in a messy inning. Josh Hader going 6 outs, he's not used to doing that recently. Edwin Diaz, he's thrown 75 pitches in the last 3 days. Same thing.
Baseball gets you choked up, man.
It does.
October baseball will get you, man.
When the runner-up or the most likely AL Cy Young runner-up just gets shelled by Kerry Carpenter, then, I mean, it's just...
Kerry Carpenter, of all people.
So, Kerry Carpenter.
There's something that happens.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Well, let me ask you guys, and this is open-ended to anybody here. I know it's still early in the postseason. We're 2 games into division series, but... who has been the most surprising? Is it the Mets after beating the Brewers, upsetting the Brewers, and being even with the Phillies? Is it the Tigers who swept the Astros and are even with the Guardians? Or is it the Royals who swept the Orioles and are now tied with the Yankees through 2 games? I mean, most surprising, I'll start with Christian here, most surprising team of the early MLB postseason.
I mean, I think it just kind of carries over from the last couple weeks of the regular season. The Detroit Tigers, who had a 1% chance on August 1st to make the playoffs, yep, or something like that, went on some crazy tear and had some help from other teams that kind of slid off as well. But the ability for the Tigers with that pitching staff, with Skubal, to find their way into the postseason, I mean, for real – Tarik Skubal gets on the mound, it feels like you're up 1-0 in the series already. And then the bullpen has looked really, really well for him all year. And again, a big
minus
time home run.
One game one collapse against Cleveland. Like, that was, yes, the only time. But like, that's the only time it's not worked according to plan yet, mm-hmm, which is nuts to think about.
And then I gave up 3 hits yesterday. Skubal went 7 innings and the bullpen just shut him out after that. So I will go with the Detroit Tigers as they are back home getting ready to host game 3. For the first time in 10 years or something like that?
2015, yeah. I think for me, it's probably San Diego. We knew they were good, but I don't think we realized San Diego. I legitimately think they're the best team in the postseason. I mean,
they've looked like it.
They looked so good against Atlanta.
Fernando.
They looked so good against LA.
Stay classy, San
Diego. And it's something where... Like, you look at the starting pitching. Like, they've got Dylan Cease, Yu Darvish, Michael King. They've got your three hot starters. Your hot relievers. They've got tons of guys. Robert Suarez, Tanner Scott. Like, they just got tons of names in that bullpen. And three hot hitters, take your pick. You know, Fernando Tatis, Jackson Merrill's been insane. They got Manny Machado, unless they get suspended from the Dodgers complaining about him. They've got all these different things. And it just, they find a way to win almost every single time. Now, granted, they lost that Saturday game 7-5. You know, it was just a little bit of late stuff there, some bad luck from their bullpen. But for the most part, they've been very, very good. And I didn't think they were going to be this good. I knew they were good, not this good.
It's funny that they're playing the Dodgers, because this team, this San Diego team, reminds me of a lot of those long postseason run Dodgers teams that made runs at the World Series. Because of all the things that you just described, this reminds me of those, you know, 2019, 2020, those years, right? Mm-hmm. When they, heck, even 2018 when they ran to and played Boston. I mean, this San Diego team reminds me of those Dodgers teams that just, you felt like they had everything that they could get to win.
And I'm just glad that there's no hostility in
yeah,
that
it's a clean rivalry. It really is. So yeah.
It's one of those ones where there's just a lot of respect. You go up and you shake hands after every game. Yep. And just a lot of respect.
Again,
because you're
San
only.
San Diego stays classic.
Yeah. I mean, you're only
San Diego.
A little bit away from them. You can drive to their stadium in between yours. It's, what, 2 hours, I think, from stadium to stadium. So just a friendly little backyard rivalry, right?
The big thing for me in this series is how San Diego's not letting those big, the top three beat them. Shohei gets that home run in the first game. He has two hits, doesn't have a hit since then, and nine at bats. Mookie Betts, no hits in the series. He's 0 for 6, three walks and a run. Freddie Freeman picks up two hits in that first game, doesn't play in game two because he tweaks the ankle injury. And they're just getting it done despite what those guys are capable of doing. It's the same thing like the Royals are 1-1 with the Yankees, despite Bobby Witt not really having much of an offensive series so far, or postseason at all. He's really not been great in October so far. And so you could see how LA could swing the series back their way. You could see how San Diego can keep having this success against the top three and take the series. Like, the guy who's arguably hurt them the most is Gavin Lux. Like, he's 3-7. Tommy Edmonds, 3-7. Like, those are the only guys that have really been successful in this series. Outside of that, it's like a Teoscar hit here, it's a Max Muncy hit here, you know, it's a Freddie hit in game one. Like, it's a lot of sporadic stuff outside of those two guys, Tommy Edman and Gavin Lux, and that's just not a scenario many teams can replicate. Atlanta did it against those three when they played late in the year. They held them, I think, to one hit in three games. But outside of that, not many teams have shut down those three guys in a series.
You mentioned Mookie Betts, and this is a totally separate conversation. There is I don't want to call him a reporter, but he is a social media guy that is going around all these different postseason games, and he's interviewing players like in the dugout before the games.
A content creator.
Yeah, there you go, that content creator. And he's asking guys like a series of questions, but he asked them all the same question: can you name the lineup of your MLB debut? Can you name who was in the lineup that day? And these guys are just rattling it off like crazy. It's like, oh yeah, this guy was in right. You know, Mookie said, oh, I was in right. He was in center. He was in left. He batted third. Like, it's really, really neat to see some of these guys go, you know, 8-10 years back and be like, they remember who they played with, where they were, and what position they played on their MLB debut. I think that stuff's really, really cool.
I mean, those milestone games and things like that, they kind of stick with you. I mean, it's, if I had to think about it, I'm trying to think, like, could I remember the lineup from the first Auburn game that I covered? Simply because it was one of those, like,
oh goodness,
that was a momentous occasion for me being in the press box and covering the Auburn game for the first time. Or, like, the Braves. Like, I'm pretty sure I could tell you the first time I was in the press box and remember, like, the Braves lineup that day. It's just one of those, that it's just, that's how it works. Like, it's, you those things stick with you a little bit.
Speaking of Auburn baseball, we have updates on that, and we need to talk about Auburn baseball. We'll do that when we come back and we wrap up hour number one with Lindsey Crosby, our baseball power hour, talking about the Tigers and Butch Thompson when we come back to wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Also wrapping up our baseball power hour. Lindsey Crosby in the studio with us. And we have Auburn baseball updates, my friend. It's great to have some of those. I know Butch Thompson met with the media, Friday of last week?
Friday afternoon.
And you got fall ball getting going. So tell us what we need to know about Auburn baseball starting back up. Yeah.
Start with some of the veterans, I guess. Cooper McMurray is currently, he has a mild break from a hit by pitch. He is not just hanging out in the dugout, though. Butch is actually having him coach first base during the squad games. The idea is he wants his leadership to still be touching every player and involved. And so he's coaching first base during the squad games, which they started over the weekend. Friday night was the first one. They went 7 innings on Friday and 9 full innings on Saturday morning. More veteran stuff. Joseph Gonzalez is taking online classes back home in Puerto Rico. He's trying to get his arm to respond well, where he can continue playing. So if he does, if his arm works out, he'll have the option to join the roster for the spring and be part of for his last year of eligibility. If not, he'll have the option to medically retire. And if that happens, I believe the NIL Opportunity Fund is going to be able to pay for the rest of his classes so he can get his degree.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, and obviously the team will get a scholarship spot back, but either way, his classes for his degree are going to be able to be paid for.
Talk about a positive side of NIL.
Exactly. And then some updates on some of the youngsters. I had asked Butch, like a lot of the attention, a lot of the oxygen in the room kind of went to a trio of freshmen that came through that made it through the draft. Connor Gatwood was drafted by the Angels. He made it to campus. Outfielder Bub Terrell was drafted by the Blue Jays. He made it to campus. And then right-hand pitcher Christian Chatterton out of Killen, Alabama. He made it to campus as well.
Yeah, that's North Alabama.
Yeah. And so, like, a lot of attention was on those three guys. And by the way, Gatwood popped 100 miles an hour the other day in a bullpen.
How about that?
So let's go.
In a bullpen.
First time Auburn's had a dude throw triple digits in a couple years now.
Who was the last?
Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you, but if I think about it long enough, I'll figure it out, and I'm going to let you know. Berkey came close. Berkey hit, I think he hit 97 or 98 one day, because the quote after was great. He's like, I kind of just blacked out, and when I looked up, he was like, I saw everybody cheer, and I got the strikeout, and I looked up, and I saw the speed, and was like, oh, that's cool.
I couldn't imagine being able to physically throw that hard.
Yeah, but somebody that I was turned on to by a talent evaluator that I know that I asked about, Chris Rimbert. It's an infielder out of Pensacola, Florida. Played a lot of third base and shortstop in high school, but is playing a lot of first and second for Auburn. And it's something where Butch said that, yes, his approach at the plate is really, really good. This is all a matter of finding him places to play. Anthony Trelongo, another incoming player that they're really excited about offensively, what he can do. It's just a question of where can we play him and figuring out the best spot for them. They have a spot open at second base, obviously. First base is good, Cooper McMurray. You'll have a DH spot there as well. But it's just trying to figure out where to put everybody. They're getting guys a lot of experience, a lot of different positions. And what they're looking for, Butch said, unlike most years, these freshman hitters, his quote I think was, quote, been physical. They've been physical, right? They don't need to wait a year to get stronger and more mature. They can contribute as freshmen, which is not a thing that this program's really had a lot of true freshmen starting for them. So the question now is figuring out positions and then figuring out what they do when they go from a live at-bat to a squad game, right? How much better do you get when you're in that competitive environment with a team behind you versus just you in the box versus another guy, which makes a lot of sense. So this is a lot of observation right now. And as Butch typically does, and I haven't seen it this year yet, but in previous years, Butch won't coach either team in a squad game. He'll let the assistants and guys like Cooper.
You and coach. I have talked about this in the past. Yeah, this is really neat.
He likes to stay back, stay separate, and observe, and kind of go back and forth. He's watching a lot of the pitching, things like that, but he doesn't take a side. He'll have like Carl Nonemaker in charge of one team, Gabe Gross in charge of the other. They each have an assistant. They'll divide everybody, analytics, everybody up into separate groups, not just for the Orange and Blue World Series, but kind of all around. That's something that they'll do.
Is that a, like a not a season-long thing, but is that a
kind of a set thing that they do over time, or is this just like day by day? Like, how does that work?
It's, from my experience, going to a lot of squad games, like whenever I can, whenever I'm free, this is something that this is pretty much how he likes to handle this. He wants Butch wants the freedom to be able to watch whatever he needs to watch, to pay attention to whatever he needs to pay attention to. If he needs to move from here to there to here, he doesn't want to be tied up in I'm having to coach this side of the ball or this coach this team, this half of the team. So they split him up. And Butch is observing, Butch is watching, looking for certain things. But again, his whole thing here is he just wants to see how these guys do in live game situations, which there's so much of this is like, how do you step up when you are in that competitive situation? A live at-bat's not the same. There's no stakes there, right? But if you are, you know, like you have a runner on second and you got to get a hit and get this guy in, do you go for the home run? Do you try to just put the ball in play and make the defense make a play? What do you do? What's that situation? How do you respond to this situation that you really can't manufacture at the same intensity in a live at bat or in a, you know, or in just a practice scenario?
Yeah,
right?
I mean, competition brings out the best or the worst, and you have to figure that out because of the rest of the SEC. Man, it's going to be brutal, as it is every single year. Auburn baseball getting going fall ball with the Tigers and Butch Thompson over at Plainsman Park. Lindsay, plug it all one more time really quickly.
I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. You can find Braves Today wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube, as well as First Pitch wherever you get your podcasts and YouTube, and the writing, bravestoday.com.
Go check them out. Lindsay Crosby, always a pleasure to have you in the studio, sir, for our Baseball Power Hour. Appreciate you as always.
Always good to be here.
Hour number one in the books. Stick around. Hour number two coming up. We're going to talk college football, Auburn, Georgia, other results from this past weekend, and some big stories going on in the college football world. All that coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you can catch up with the podcast. You'll find it on our station website, ESPNAU.com. We take the show, post it as a podcast. I think we had trouble with the one that was supposed to upload yesterday. I got it fixed today. So be sure, if you missed any of yesterday's show, you can go and check that out on our station website, and you can check out hour number one from today's show. If you missed it, we had our Baseball Power Hour, so if you're a baseball fan or want to get caught up on things around Major League Baseball, Atlanta Braves, off-season outlook, some Auburn baseball updates in there as well. Lindsey Crosby joined us in the first hour, so be sure you go and listen back to that later on today. You can find that at ESPNAU.com. You can also find our SEC Football Challenge on there. That is still going on. Be sure to get your picks in by Friday at midnight. So you'll find that on our website as well. Before we get into content, though, going to talk a lot of college football here in hour number two. Want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour each and every day from 3 to 4 here on ESPN.
Phone lines are open in hour number two. Would love to hear from you. Your thoughts on everything going on around college football. 334-321-1390. Or you can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box. 334-784-1067. Christian Griffin with me in the studio for hour number two. And I'm not going to stay on this topic long, but it has to be addressed. It has to be brought up. Stop me if you've heard this before. There's another Georgia football player who's in trouble with the law. He was arrested. Again, another Georgia football player has ran in and gotten in trouble with law enforcement. And again, I'm not staying on this long because there's obviously nothing we can do about it. And seems like every week we hop on this radio station and we talk about Georgia football players being in trouble and doing the wrong things. Unfortunately, I guess, I don't know the best way to say this, it wasn't the typical crime. I mean, again, no crimes are good, but the trend of crazy driving, bad driving, reckless driving, that wasn't so much the case here, Christian.
It wasn't. Wide receiver Colby Young, who led Georgia in receiving against Auburn last week, actually had three catches for 51 yards, was arrested on charges of battery and arrest on an unborn child, which is just a crazy topic. He was booked at 4:18 a.m. Bond set at $2,500, but he remained in there for 4 hours. But basically, along the story, just summarizing article from New York Times, his ex-girlfriend came in to discuss what they were, I guess, the status of their relationship, and got mad because then I guess he was on the phone talking to another female and the conversation got a little physical, and he reportedly picked her up, began to squeeze her torso and abdomen very hard. She had bruises and dislocations on the bottom right side of her chest where it meets her abdomen. She declined to go to the ambulance and everything, but just again, a crazy scenario, a crazy story, and by no means do we continue to harp on University of Georgia for a topic like this, but it just kind of falls into the trend of yet another, not even another player, but another skill position, another player wearing the red and black that gets the red and blue lights called on them. And this one is, I mean,
this one's disgusting.
I was going to say, this one is worse than going 100 miles an hour because, again, I don't know the intent. I'm not going to say that I know the intent, but if you're grabbing a woman that is pregnant, punching her in the stomach and doing stuff like that, there's definitely some crazy intent there.
Yeah, to which seem to have harmful intent. And look, I know we've given Kirby Smart a lot of hell on this show for lack of discipline, lack of control for his guys and his players. In this sort of a scenario, I get the easy reaction is to say, way to go, Kirby. Got another one in jail. What's Kirby? And I'm going to come to Kirby's defense on this one. What is he supposed to do?
Yeah.
Like, this is something. When it was reckless driving after reckless driving after reckless driving, lives being taken, threatened, like it, when it was the same thing over and over and over again, that's where we were really starting to get frustrated. This is a personal matter,
yes,
off the field, in the home. You can't control this. I mean, this is something that as a coach, you have no control over something like this happening.
You don't, and I'm going to sound like an old head saying something like this. The college football slate last Saturday is what the transfer portal and NIL were hoping to do. I'm going to sound like an old head, but I'll say it. That's a reaction of it, in my opinion. This type of personal thing, just with young athletes having more money than they know what to do with, it changes the mindset of everything. And again, maybe not necessarily as much in this case, but with the Georgia football program and guys getting cars and everything, that's something that we've talked about where, again, I think that world is being blocked off with the negative reality of NIL and the transfer portal and everything. And again, not trying to dive too far into everything, but I guess we'll try and stick to the positive side of it with Saturday and all of the crazy games happening, because I think that was what That was the intent of why everything had come up in the first place.
It's a Saturday like we saw last weekend and what we're hoping to see this weekend, which are the highlights of college football, which is what people are still coming back for. It's what we continue to talk about and want to talk about every single day on our show is we have a top three matchup this weekend in college football. We have more upsets in the making, in the brewing, like something's going to happen this weekend, and yet it seems the headlines are dominated by Georgia players being arrested and new leagues trying to be created by investment groups, which we're going to get to in a little bit. And it just feels that college football, the storylines are the wrong storylines. It's the dominating stories are overshadowing what's truly happening or what we want to care about, which is just the results on the field.
Right.
Like the results of what is happening on a Saturday morning, a Saturday afternoon, or a late Saturday night. I mean, that's what we want to talk about, but we almost feel, just to give you insight on us as radio people, we feel that we have to talk about the other things because they're such big topics and they're so heavy and you feel like you can't get away from them and there's not enough time in the day to talk about all the off-field situations and the on-field situations at the same time.
Right, and with the on-the-field, that's what you wish you could set everything at because, again, going back to what I was saying, this is what the NIL and transfer portal wanted, referring to teams like Vanderbilt and teams like Arkansas being able to upset Alabama and Tennessee. It's not like it's the top 300 players commit to four different schools and Alabama goes 12-0 every year. This is kind of the world that was wanting, and I think that creates a lot of positive chaos in the world of college football on the field. It makes it to where your team, your name, your jersey or whatever can get so much more popularity than it would. And I think that's the good thing of it, but there's so much else. And now, I mean, dealing with all of the off-the-field personal issues, now dealing with guys threatening with more money in the middle of the season, and if you're not going to get it, okay, cool, I'm going to transfer, or I'm going to opt out in the middle of the season,
use my red shirt,
and then transfer in week four of the season because it was nice that you paid me my $225,000, but, you know, I woke up one morning and decided I want you to double it.
My mom said I'm worth more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, my two catches this year said that I think that I should get more.
I get where you're going. I mean, I think it's with any decision, with any change, with any redirection in the world. This is outside of sports, too. I mean, every decision has a consequence, positive and negative, right? And I think you're onto a really good point there. This whole new landscape of college football, everything combined, and you know what I'm talking about here. I'm not going to list them all. It has created, as you mentioned, positive chaos on the field. Vanderbilt taking down Alabama for the first time in my lifetime. Arkansas upsetting Tennessee as a 2-touchdown underdog. Like, you have 30 teams that are competing for the college football playoff right now. That's positive chaos. That's awesome. That's what we wanted. But it is creating the negative indifferences, the negative whatever, the negative actions and things that are happening, whether it be with the law or with NIL or transfers or opting out or coaches being on hotter seats than they've ever been on. I mean, just so many of those things too. Negative discourse, I think is the word I was looking for there. It's causing both of those things, positive and negative, and I hate it because we're going to get into it here in a second, but man, What do people click on more, right? It's all about the clicks nowadays in the journalism world. Are they going to click on the story of a Georgia football player being arrested, or are they going to click on the story of Arkansas upsetting Tennessee? They're going to click on the Georgia football player one, the arrest. They're going to click on the opt-out, the transfer, because I think that has a lot to do with the world that we live into, where it's like, oh, that was cool. Oh, Vandy beat Bama. Big in the moment, but here we are on Tuesday, and everybody's moved on. Everybody has moved on from Vanderbilt beating Alabama. Maybe not them in Nashville, but most of the college football world has just said, oh, all right,
you go
next.
You look at last Saturday, you look 3 days from now, man, that was awesome, but
Now what?
I'm back at work, and yeah, I don't think about it. But then you see something like this come up, and granted, again, going back to it, this is not, I don't believe on Kirby at all, but it's just the fact that you hear Georgia player arrested, and it's like, oh, let me click on that because mm-hmm. here's another one. And it takes away from, again, the on-the-field actions of players, because I would much rather be able to click on ESPN, click on the college football tab, and it be, I don't know, Diego Pavia did this at, you know, did this on the field, rather yeah. than it be whatever.
Yeah, this
it
dude
may be,
won or, SEC Player of the Week. This right. guy won Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week. This guy broke a record. Bet you didn't know this.
But nobody cares.
No, it's crazy.
Nobody cares that Ashton Gentry is the best running back in college football right now.
Which half the people probably couldn't even tell you who he is.
Right. And had three rushing touchdowns. He plays on a blue field, if that helps.
And he stands in the backfield straight up with his arms down.
Straight.
It's so funny, man. But somebody said on social media yesterday, I saw it last night, they said he stands in the backfield.
Like Michael Myers, is that what?
Oh, no, I didn't. That's a good one, too. No, somebody said he stands in the backfield like you stood in your parents' doorway after you threw up in the bathroom.
He stands in the backfield like he's standing, staring through the microwave, waiting for the pizza rolls to eat.
That's literally what he just stands there, just waits, and then he gets up and he goes. He's the Boise State running back who leads now. I believe this may have been a clickbait headline, but I believe he is. I know he's jumped in the Heisman odds, but he may be leading the Heisman.
I wouldn't
odds.
Doubt it. I mean,
he
I,
needs to be in New York. If you don't plays, know who he is, go find him.
He plays 2.5 quarters of football just about every single game. And granted, do with that what you will with the Boise State schedule, but when you're averaging 17 yards and you're putting up 248 yards on the ground and 3 touchdowns, I don't care who you're playing. I don't know if I could go out against a 5th grade team and do something like that.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It really is. And those are the topics we want to talk about, right?
But,
that's what we want to get to.
But if I'm a listener, I tuned out half of that part because I wanted to hear about Georgia and everything. Well, it's
one thing I've learned, and we're about to get to break. One thing I've learned in my short time in sports talk radio.
Only one thing?
Yeah, one and only. The one and only. I've learned that there's always something. In sports, there's always something to talk about. There's always something happening. There's always news. Even the days where you walk in and you're like, what are we going to talk about today?
Yeah.
Then you're like, oh, this happened. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. I missed this. Oh, wait. He got arrested. Why? You know what I'm saying?
Takes
there's 14 always
14 seconds and 3 Google searches to find an hour and a half of content.
There's always news, man. There's always news, and especially in college football, which is a good thing. And we love that we get to be a part of it, and we love that we get to talk about it, and we love that we get to talk about it with you. And that's what we're going to do continuing when we come back, because there were a lot of big results in this past weekend of college football, and seems to be some more confusion in the offensive room for Auburn and Hugh Freeze. All of that when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. And there's some videos and some conversations going around right now in terms of Auburn football. The one that went around on Saturday was after the 4th-and-1 call, or I guess the 4th-and-1 play, that is, because we don't necessarily know what the call was. But the 4th-and-1 play.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. Bum, bum. The 4th-and-1 play where Auburn's Peyton Thorne appeared to take it upon himself and try to pick up that first down and pick up a lot more than that. And when the play didn't happen, the camera, and credit to ABC for this, immediately.
Yeah, I was about to say, they had it
I
ready.
Mean, that producer said, go, 1-1-1, go. Immediately went to head coach Hugh Freeze, who was visibly disgusted, frustrated, threw his hands up, made the most sour-looking face, and just sulked and sat and just sunk. And it was in that moment where everybody was like, oh, Peyton Thorne wasn't supposed to do that. But Peyton Thorne went on a podcast show today, and he kind of I guess, went against what his head coach had to say in the postgame interview on Saturday.
He did, yeah. So even going back to Saturday, after the play happened, Thorne gets his way to the sideline, goes and sits down with all the quarterbacks and freezes lighting them up.
Oh, he is letting him have
going to town, giving him the metaphorical business.
Which,
at the time, yeah, you're sitting there, if you're Freeze or if what we saw was, okay, why did Thorne keep the football? Why was it a keep fourth and one with Jarquez Hunter, hand the ball off to him? Which, haven't said that before on a 1 yard situation.
Yeah, shocker.
Why not just give the ball to 27? And so even the announcers and everything were saying we think Thorne was supposed to give this one up. Freeze in the postgame press conference was asked about it, and he said that it was not a quarterback read. It was supposed to be a dive to the left for Jarquez Hunter, who was just supposed to run, essentially, right to the left of the center and try and pick up a yard, which I feel like with how he looked and how the offense looked running the football, I think he would have gotten the yard.
The averages would say he would have.
Right. But Thorne obviously decided to keep it, tried to dance around the right side. Jarquez Hunter looked confused. The offensive line looked confused, and you know what I'm talking about. The play blew up. We lost 3 or 4 yards. Auburn turned it over on downs. Georgia drove down and scored. Well, then today they asked him about the fourth and one and about why he changed the play call.
Peyton Thorne.
Thorne asked him why he changed the play call, and Thorne said he didn't. And so regardless of which way you want to go with this, I'm more in the I don't care who or what the play call was. It's the fact that it's 3 days after the play happened, and it kind of represents the whole season to where the head coach and the quarterback is not on the same page. And they're not head-to-head going at each other, but it's a very much I'm right, and then he says the same thing. He also says I'm right. So you're butting ends of I don't care who is right. I don't care who is wrong. Why are we not on the same page?
Why are we still at the point of
this was the call. Why can't both people agree? Or why can't, if one person is wrong, regardless of who it is, just say it?
My question is what you're saying. Where's the breakdown in communication?
Right.
Where is this going wrong? Because it obviously is. Like, and what's frustrating to me is when we're dealing with this and we're hearing this and we're seeing this, after Hugh Freeze told us, and Peyton Thorne told me on this very show at SEC Media Days in Dallas, Texas, he sat down at our table, put the headset on, and looked me in the face, and I asked him about the communication that had been talked about, and he said, yeah, it's better than it's ever been. We're good. Everybody's on the same page. Hugh Freeze had talked about the language. Like, all of that we were told in July, and yet, as you said, we're still having confusion 6 games in. I think there are some factors to that, and we're going to get there. But let's see what Shane has to say. Shane, you're on the line, my man. What's up?
Hey, I don't think that Thorne is going to see another snap at Auburn after the way that he looked and how he's going on all these podcasts contradicting his coach. And
you think he's done?
I mean, why would he? Why would he have a tenth, you know, chance? I mean, like, what is new that's going to happen that could possibly show the coaches that, yeah, okay, I do understand what you're saying. I think Hugh Freeze is finally fed up with it, and he's like, we're just going to give, you know, we're going to go out with someone that can understand. I think Hank Brown's the quarterback. I think they're doing it over this bye week to give them 2 weeks of playing time, practice time, and then Missouri? I bet you that it's Hank Brown coming out there against Missouri.
Mm.
And then one more thing is, you know, I've noticed this year in particular, but the last couple of years that the Auburn family, you know, it's always been about Auburn family, even the recruits.
Sure.
To say, hey, it just feels like family there. That's slowly going away. You know, it's just a lot of complaining about things that we can't change. What's the fan going to do? All it is just we're moaning, complaining about something that you can't do. What is the fan going to change? Yeah. So why are we complaining about it? If we want those recruits to stay, the ones that are coming in, how about let's stay like a family, and we'll work it out. And if not, then Hugh Freeze is not going to be there, you know, after next year. If it's the same way, we're not going to put up with it. Yellow Wood's not going to put up with it, you know. So, you know, let's just go back to the family part and at least keep our dignity. That's all I
got to
say, guys.
All right, appreciate the call. Thanks so much for that. 334-321-1390. Your response to that?
My question, if I'm playing devil's advocate, at least for the first part, I agree with the second part, but the first part is, would the game have been better if Hank Brown had been at quarterback? Peyton Thorne did not turn the ball over. He didn't necessarily look great, but...
He didn't win it, but he didn't lose it.
He did not lose it, and... That's kind of been the part that we've talked about the entire time of if you have a B Peyton Thorne, you're good enough to go out and win games. I think this Georgia defense is one of the best in the country. Went 16 of 27, threw for 200 yards, which against the Power 4 team we have not really seen. And with somebody like Hank Brown, where the confidence is at a low right now just because of the first half against Arkansas. If you would have thrown him into that game, I think it would have been a lot worse just because Thorne, again, has played in that type of game, at least the experience-wise. And that's why I think Freeze keeps going back to Peyton gives us the best chance to win just because of the experience and everything. So that's my comment with that. And because I wasn't unhappy with the way that Peyton played. Again, there's a couple plays here and there, a couple calls, like the third and long draws that I don't necessarily agree with, but Peyton's just calling, or Peyton's just doing what was called.
So we think.
Yeah. I guess we have to ask him which one for...
Well, I guess you got to ask Hugh Freeze, you got to ask Peyton Thorne, and then ask, I don't know, Malcolm Simmons and see what he says.
Right. Ask any, or I mean, yeah, any media guy, they'd know the right answer too,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
But I know I don't disagree with, that's kind of what I've been hinting at, and I don't necessarily think it's just at Auburn. I think it's around the landscape of college football. I don't think that there's loyalty to a program. There's not loyalty to colors anymore. There's not loyalty to anything. The players use it as leverage because they go where they want because that's where the dollar signs are. And I think that there's a lot of other things that go to it as well. But family right now is a very hard topic in conversation in the college football world, just because of everything else that goes into it.
Yeah, there's a lot too. And I want to continue this, though, when we come back, because it is a bye week for Auburn, which is typically a time to get better, get healthy, and prepare for the back half of the season. But here we are, six games in, and it's the same conversations. We'll talk more about this when we come back. Phone lines continue to be open, 334-321-1390. We got 30 more minutes here on a Tuesday afternoon.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Christian Griffin with us in the studio as well. Let's get back to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Spectre, you're on the line, my man. What's going on?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on what who's your co-host today?
I got Christian in here with me today.
Christian, yeah, okay. He was talking about, well, we just can't take Peyton out because we ain't got anybody experienced. Well, let me say about that. I've been trying to get Peyton Thorne out of Auburn since last year.
That's true, yeah.
And the man can throw the ball. The man can run the ball. But he cannot manage a game. His decision-making is not there. And why do we continue to put him in situations that, I tell you what, it reminds me of somebody that's got a mental problem that everything's fine to something clicks, something clicks inside of him, and it's like you can see it if on the films. If you look at Peyton's reactions when he's trying to read the defense, he looks like he's completely lost. And for the life of me, to get to the point where I was talking about what Christian said, you know, if you put you can't if Hank Brown and Walter White, you can't Walker White. If they're not put on the field, they can't get any experience. You know, for life, I don't expect them to be put into the game when the game is on the line and you may have a chance to win. But when your three scores are down, why ain't you putting somebody in there giving them game experience?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gets me about Freeze. He refused. I don't know what he has. Peyton must have something on him. It's the only thing I can figure out. And I don't understand why he hasn't put Hank Brown in or White in to get that experience.
Yeah. No,
against a Georgia team, you know?
Yeah, I understand the frustrations. I do. And I've been quoted as saying I hate the fact that Hank Brown was basically given a half to prove it, and he didn't play well at all, played pretty poorly, actually, and hasn't seen the field since, right? I mean, I know that's tough, but I do agree. Go ahead.
I can tell you why Hank Brown played poorly. I mean, he had a good moment last year. I guess it was in the Maryland game, right?
Yeah, the bowl game.
Yeah. So, you know, that was under false pretense, I gather. But he's a freshman, and he's not being developed by Hugh Freeze, who we hired him to do. You know, how in the world do you what do you expect from a freshman when you put him out, just throw him out there?
Well, that's what I was going to say about Peyton. Is I know I understand your point, and I agree. I don't think the quarterbacks, whoever it is, Peyton Thorne or Hank Brown in the game, they are not being put in a position to succeed. I think that is a given. I think that has been shown in every single game this season that Auburn has lost. Auburn is not putting their quarterbacks in a position to win games, and that's a really tough thing to swallow.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that same thing since Malzahn left. And actually, it was happening to Malzahn, too, there at the end.
Yeah.
It got to the point where the recruiting just fell off with Malzahn, but the decision-making of a head coach was kind of resembles what he was going through right now. And I'm thinking something, you know, something is on the plains, whether it's some kind of poison ivy that gets to these coaches or something and makes them just start scratching or something.
Something's got to change for sure.
Yeah. But I can't figure it out as far as what's going on with the head coaches. I mean, Freeze is actually doing everything right when it comes to recruiting. But he better watch out. He's going to start losing these recruits.
Yeah, got to get results. Spectre, thanks so much for the call, my man. Always great to hear from you. Thanks so much. 334-321-1390. And I'll say it again. Hugh Freeze, this season, in the losses that, look, it's probably been in every game, but you can overcome it against Alabama A&M. But in Auburn's four losses this year, Hugh Freeze has put his quarterbacks in terrible spots, terrible positions, even after saying, we have to limit the package, we have to make it smaller, we have to make it simpler for whoever is managing the offense. And I think the confusion on 4th-and-1, that was visible evidence, Christian. That's visible proof that it's too complicated, there's confusion, there is something falling through the cracks here, whether it's in practice, whether it's in film review, whether it's in game day prep, whether it's in the game with the headset on, something is happening between head coach and quarterback, and it's causing Auburn to lose football games, and it's also causing us here in the middle of October to still not know who the quarterback is and still not know who gives Auburn the best chance to win a football game. And we're a week in October, and Auburn's 2-4. The team's going down the hill, and they don't know who the quarterback is because the head coach can't put them in a position to succeed.
You want to know who gives Auburn the best chance to win a football game?
Jarquez Hunter.
Somebody who carried the ball 13 times against Georgia with 91 yards. Averaged 7 yards a pop when he got the football. Why is he getting 13 carries? Again, if we are limiting the package, which is what was talked about, on 4th and 1, following a timeout too? Why is there confusion?
That's not the first time that's happened.
No, not at all. But if we're limiting a package and we're trying to put somebody in a position to succeed, give it to the best player on the field and say, here, go get a yard. Now, again, that play kind of summarizes everything. There's not that much emotion that goes into that play as if we were thinking that Auburn was going to go and dominate following that first down and win the football game. But that kind of summarizes everything, that when you are right in the middle of a football game against the number 5 team in the country, all of a sudden,
Chaba! Those things can't happen.
They can't happen.
And that's what I was saying a week ago.
And that is what I talked about a couple weeks ago. Auburn could still be a good team this year. They won't be a great team, and they dang sure won't be an elite team, because teams like that don't shoot themselves in the foot like that. They let the things that are easy be easy. Auburn has found a way recently to make things that quote-unquote should be easy for some reason extremely difficult.
Which is so frustrating, which is why so many people get upset with this team, because it's like, man, most of us, there are people who maybe don't see it or will refuse to see it, but we have said in the first 2 days this week, Auburn looked better against Georgia. Auburn looked good against Oklahoma. They just blew it, right? Because that's what this team did. I mean, that's what this team does, I guess. That's what losing teams do. Sorry, that's a fact. But Auburn has gotten better. And I said this yesterday, man, they cleaned up the turnovers. They cleaned up the penalties for the most part. They've cleaned up the things that plagued them early in the year against California and Arkansas. And now it's take 2 steps forward and 5 steps back. It's like, man, you clean this up, but then you dirtied the other shoe. Like, it's crazy to see, and it's so frustrating for everybody involved. I know it's frustrating for the guys in that room and the coaches. Believe me, I've talked to a handful of them. I know. That's extremely frustrating.
It is, especially when, I mean, we talked about it over the break. I think if Peyton played the way that he did against Georgia in the other 3 losses, I think you could sit at 5-1 right now. And the other question that we were asking each other was, if Auburn was 5-0 going into this game,
Or even 4-1.
Or 4-1. Would you be disappointed in this sort of outcome? And I think the answer is definitely yes, but right now it's almost just, eh.
My thing is, we're about to get to the phone lines again. Yeah, that's how I pose that question. Let's say realistically, Auburn was 4-1 going into the Georgia game. And I'm not saying with how the game played out. I'm looking at the final score. Just the final score with how Auburn played a good game, not great, and Georgia beats them by, what was it, 18?
Yeah, but it was to where Georgia
pulled
actually
away.
Beat you rather than Auburn losing a football game.
Correct. They just beat you. They pulled away at the end. Auburn's 4-2 going into the bye week. Are you that upset? No. You feel like everything is still out in front of you if you're Auburn. But that's not the case because of how it went down in Athens and how it went down against Oklahoma and how it went down against Arkansas and how it went down against California. Mike, you're on the line, 334-321-1390. What's on your mind on this Tuesday afternoon?
Hey, beautiful afternoon here in Auburn. And
yes.
We get to be Tiger fans. Hey, let's don't be Alabama fans, where if somebody has a hangnail, if somebody does something wrong, everything, baby, out with the bathwater. Yeah, we know this team is where it is. Coach Freeze has said this team is where it is. I've been a player. I've been a high school coach. And I'm going to tell you, the worst situation in the world is to request of a team that is not exceptional to be absolutely exceptional on every single play. That's the worst place for a player. That's the worst place for a coach. Look at Peyton Thorne's stats from this weekend. Think of what his stats would be if he didn't have all those drops. when you hit a player between the two digits on the front of his jersey, that's got to be a completion for the quarterback.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, that's not the way we keep stats. As a player, it killed me when I threw a ball into the hands of a receiver, he dropped the ball, and the stat goes against me. Seriously? But that's the way it is.
Sure.
So let's put a little logic behind this, a little less emotional analytics behind this, number one. Number two, hey, totally screwed up the beginning of the season. Look at how many turnovers we've had in the last two games. One. That's a real positive.
Absolutely.
Look at the what should have been completions. That's a real positive. Look at the pro football focused stats of should our guys be running the ball more? That's what I'd do if I were a play caller. But you can't run the ball and never pass and expect the back is going to get that many yards. The only reason you are successful when you successfully run the ball is if, A, you either have an extraordinarily dominant rush game or you're doing a balanced attack and the defense has to play honest. As a play caller, I would always strive to make sure that I was about balanced in my attempts of rushes to passes because that way it forces the defense to play honest. Are we making some bad play calls? Yeah, probably. Let's talk about the fourth and one for a second because you guys are hammering Thorne. Thorne made a mistake, no doubt. Actually, I think Coach Freeze made a mistake. That should have been a timeout. They came out of the quarter break. They had the play laid on. What so many fans forget is the enemy's got a voice. The enemy is, in this case, is our opponent. The guy who was the end man on the line for Georgia, he was in a two-point stance. I don't know if he was a safety, if he was an outside linebacker, I'm not sure. He came and he stood. He didn't creep up. He stood in that two-point stance.
Mm-hmm.
We did not have a tight end on that side. So had they done that dive left that was the original play call they said, Hunter was going to get hit in the backfield. They may have both gotten hit in the backfield because that guy was coming full speed, nobody with a hat on him. And that's what Thorne did is he tried to make the correction. It didn't work. The play got blown up. But you got to remember, the enemy's always got a vote. So having said all that, maybe hoping to be the voice of reason, and I understand that you're disappointed, where do you stand on where we are now?
With all that, and we appreciate the call. Very, very good points there, Mike. Appreciate you calling in. All of that being said is what I've been saying is that's what's frustrating is Auburn cleaned up the turnovers. Auburn is losing on drops and blown up plays and a single, like single digit, like four or five bad decisions. That is what is frustrating, right, Christian? And I think that's what we're both trying to say simultaneously here. And again, all great points by Mike that I agree with is that's what is frustrating is we thought, okay, after Cal or after Arkansas, we were like, all right, this, and this needs to be fixed. And I think Auburn has done that. But new problems arose. And I get that that happens with every team. But Auburn, again, is not good enough to overcome things like that. Auburn, Mike, to your point, Auburn's not good enough to line up on fourth and one and have the play be blown up and still get it. I trust Jarquez Hunter more in that situation, but there's no guarantee he was going to pick up a first down either way, right? But Auburn is not good enough to have poor management, poor decisions, and things go wrong and win football games. And that's the reality of this team in year two under a new head coach. That's the reality of a team that more times than not in the SEC in this particular year, Auburn is the less talented team, which means you have to be exceptional. You have to be over and better than what you're supposed to be. You have to make a couple of big-time winning plays. And those things aren't happening. Nobody's saying that Auburn's got to play perfect for four quarters. Nobody's saying Peyton Thorne has to go 30 of 30 and every call has to be correct. But it's the little things that
I see that other people are seeing that if you just get them cleaned up, man, this could be a really, really good Auburn team.
They can be, and that's what we've talked about. We, at least I don't think our intent was to hammer Thorne, if anything. I think it was more so
situation.
To talk about the fact of regardless of who is to blame, it's the fact that there's still confusion on something like that after you have 2.5 minutes to talk about it on the sideline. And if it was the part where something didn't line up, then yeah, I should have used the timeout, regroup and everything. But it's the little things like that that we're talking about where you're only if 4 or 5 times away from something like that happening, from being able to take the step from good to great and then great to elite. Mm-hmm. Cleaning up 3 or 4 of those a game. And we've seen a lot of them be cleaned up from this past year to this year. We've seen them cleaned up from game 2 to now game 6. And by no means are we trying to shy away from anything like that. It's just frustrating when it seems like the things that are being cleaned up, it almost seems like something else has now taken the forefront of that.
334-321-1390. That is the phone line number to get you through to us. We need to get to our final break here in hour number 2. We will come back. We will wrap it all up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Looks like we may have a phone call coming through. We'll try to get to that after the break. Be sure we wrap it up then, and we'll wrap up the Tuesday edition of the show after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We don't have long. Let's get to the phone lines one more time. Dan, you're on the line. I got about 30 seconds for you, brother.
I think you got to know who you're playing. You know, if you go and try to run the ball up the middle or anything close to that on 4th and 1 at Georgia, Georgia's got usually one of the best defensive lines in the nation. You're not going to win that battle very often. I would have loved to see something to the outside, something more creative, you know, a rollout, toss to the tight end, anything. But I just think that play was doomed from the start. Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. I'm with him on that. I mean, something different than, hey, let's just line up pound for pound and see if we can beat Georgia on a 4th and 1. I get it. I'm with you.
It goes right back to putting your guys in the right spot.
But putting them in a position to win games, make plays. Gosh.
That desk didn't do anything to you.
Sorry, I didn't mean that. we're about to get kicked out of here with the music. Christian, appreciate you being in. You're here Friday, right?
I am.
Cool. All right, you'll be here on Friday. Lee Scott's at home again this week. You guys have Wadley at home. Is that correct?
We do.
You're home. I'm home. Crazy. Auburn High has Smith Station this Friday.
Is that the first time we've both been at home?
I think so.
Other than maybe week 1.
Maybe. Yeah, I was on week 1. Yeah. But So, you were here all day. We talked a lot of college football here in hour number 2. Hour number 1 had Lindsey Crosby, our baseball power hour. We talked Braves as their season has come to an end. A lot of postseason talk as well. Auburn baseball information in that first hour as well. Catch up with all of that with the podcast version of the show, ESPNAU.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 get the Georgia outlook on the win over Auburn, and they move in to the rest of their season, plus Double D. Daryl Dapperts joins us for Double D Wednesdays. That'll be coming up in hour number 2 on the show tomorrow. Back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN. Shout out Orthopedic Clinic for bringing you the second hour of the show today, as they do every single day. And we're back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. For Christian Griffin, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.